Blog Talk Radio.
There's so much to tell about the trip I led to St. Augustine to Cuba that today is just the beginning of a wonderful journey into our historical past. The food, dance, music, and culture provides a window into the resilience and creativity of people, their passions, and their persistence. We'll start the journey today and continue it into the weeks to come. It's multiculturalism at its best, from Fort Mose to the Woolworth lunch counter to Old Havana. Buckle up and travel with me back in time to an era gone by, but still in our hearts and minds. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. So glad you're listening to us today. I hope you had a great 4th of July week or weekend. And thank you. We've been off the air for a couple of weeks because I've been out and about, both in and out of the United States. But I'm going to bring you up to speed. Not going to be able to do everything today because there's just way too much to tell. I'm probably going to do this over the course of a couple of weeks. Next week I'll be off traveling back to Florida for a convention, but throughout the summer we will highlight this trip because it has so much significance and meaning. And most importantly, a lot of people don't know this history. Let me just start by saying that most of my listeners are Americans, even though I have Europeans who listen. I have people who live in Asia who listen in Asia and Africa. Most Americans who listen, because we spend all of our time in the United States, there's a tendency to just nationalize our perspective, particularly as it relates to history. And there's some people who don't even want to hear history. They just feel like, let's just move forward. So I'm not talking to them, and they should not listen to my show because I definitely talk a lot about history. I'm hoping that this series of programs that we do and that the information that I share with you will help particularly my American listeners to begin to expand your thinking as much as possible beyond the scope of our shores, that being the domestic and the obviously Hawaii and Alaska, but basically the domestic U.S. perspective. Because if you just focus on that, then you're going to miss an awful lot. Two reasons why. Number one is that we share a history with the rest of the Western Hemisphere, particularly the Americas, all the way up in Canada and all the way down to Argentina. There is a shared history there, and that's a part of what I'm doing with this show and what the trip really focused on. And number two, it's important for us to remember that the United States is only 5% of the world's population. And that means that 95% roughly of the other don't live in the United States. So despite political dynamics that are going on that I'm not even going to deal with, but I'm looking at the reality of the shared community that we're a part of and beginning to look beyond our own level of comfort. So that's getting back to my trip. This trip is a result of the diversity work that I've been doing now for 30 years, and also a wonderful trip that I took in 2013 to St. Augustine, Florida. And I want to thank Margaret Gonzalez, who is the visionary founder of the International Association of Hispanic Meeting Professionals. I'm connected with that group. My CDMP, Certified Diversity Meeting Professionals, comes from that group. And in that year, they met in St. Augustine, Florida. Now, I've been to Florida many times, like most Americans. You don't necessarily go to St. Augustine. I've been to Jacksonville, and I've been to Miami several times in Orlando, where I'm going in 2 days. So those parts of Florida I'm very familiar with. But when it comes to old Florida, you can't ignore St. Augustine because that's old Florida. So in 2013, I took a trip there, was a part of this conference, spoke there, and then we did what's called a FAM tour. FAM tour is a familiarization tour where typically people in the travel and tourism industry are treated to the highlights and the best parts of a particular region. So we went here, there, and everywhere, heard a lot about the history of Fort Lauderdale and not Fort Lauderdale, but St. Augustine and Florida. And I went with a smaller group to a place called Fort Mose. Fort Mose is the Cajun, and I say that because the fort is no longer there, or the settlement is no longer there, but it is the place where slaves escaped south. Yes, they did. Yes, they came north. They came to Boston, where I currently live, but they also went south if they were lucky enough to find out the path and the trail to get there in the 1700s. So slaves from Georgia and the Carolinas, North and South Carolina, particularly in those regions, they got the word, they head out late at night, and if they were lucky enough, they finally got to Fort Mose, which is just outside of the city limits of St. Augustine. Now, during that time, the Spanish controlled that region. They controlled that part of Florida, and they were all Catholic. And the Catholic Church, along with Spain, had recently, this is back in the 1700s, recently outlawed slavery in particular areas. Not in Cuba, not in some other areas, but in areas like Florida, they had outlawed it in Spanish Florida. So you're a slave. You've successfully escaped. That's harrowing to do that, particularly with the swamps and the heat and all that stuff. Hats off to everybody who made it. They immediately converted to Catholicism, and they were either freed that time period or shortly thereafterward. And what turned out to be a handful of slaves ultimately ended up being 100 or so slaves and their families, who then, it's a long history, but they eventually settled in the area called Fort Mose. So, to make a long story short, they developed a community with the blessings of the Spanish church and the authorities, and they were literally free people, not in a segregated concept that we know of in the United States, even though African slaves may have married African slaves, but in many cases they intermarried, and it was not against the law, because the dynamics of slavery with the Spanish and the Portuguese, it's brutal, it is, in terms of how they treated slaves, particularly in Latin America. But their concept of integration was a lot looser than the concept of integration with the British. And so what we now face in the United States with black-white issues, which is a carryover from slavery, is different than the racial dynamics that played out ultimately in Latin America, including Cuba. So I say all that because in 1768, the Spanish ultimately lost the land and they had to head south, and they took the people with them, the Spanish, the Indians who wanted to come, the slaves who were still there, and the freed black people who were a part of Fort Mose. All of them packed up and they went to Cuba. And so that's the route that my trip took, and that was the route that I wanted to explore, going from St. Augustine and then ultimately going to Cuba. So there were nearly 20 of us on this trip, and people joined us along the way, but it was an extraordinary experience just to trace that route and to bring things real time up to 2017. There was a lot of education that took place, and we ate a lot of food. Oh, my gosh, I've gained about 5 pounds or so, 5 or 6 pounds that I am trying really hard to now take off because I have to go to the doctor next month. That's another story. The food everywhere was delicious in Florida, in Cuba. In Cuba, we had lobster every day because they have Caribbean lobsters, and so it's nothing for them to sell Caribbean lobster tails that are prepared just elegantly prepared in their restaurants or paladars that they use. Paladars are actually homes that have been converted into restaurants. And again, I'm going to go more into that kind of detail with another show because it's just way too much to talk about. So let me back you up and take you back to St. Augustine. So we arrived, we got settled into our hotel, very nice hotel that we stayed in. And then we heard a rendition of the racial dynamics that had taken place in the civil rights era by our host and our guide, Bernadette Reeves, who did a fantastic job of guiding us and being our tour guide for the 2 days that we were in St. Augustine. So we started off at a restaurant called Columbia's, which is wonderful. It does have Cuban roots to it. Paella is what I ate. They have foods that you're familiar with. They had sangria, so there's a real strong Spanish influence in St. Augustine. And I should also say that some of you may not know, but St. Augustine is the oldest European settled, continuously occupied settlement slash city in America. So if anybody wants to know what's the oldest city, it is St. Augustine. And as we learn from our guide Bernadette, when the Spanish came in the 1500s, they did bring slaves with them. But as I've just mentioned to you, St. Augustine became the final place that slaves could go to be freed. So as Bernadette had said on the tour, she said it's the first city that had slavery, and it was ultimately the last city where you could become free during the 1700s. Just an interesting connection. So we learned a lot about Fort Mose, the people who lived there, again, because of Catholicism and because there was not this rigid black-white strict segregation of the races in that area. You had a lot of intermarrying and intermixing, which continues throughout Latin America, and that's why Cuba is really a multicultural country, very, very multicultural, because of the guidelines that were followed and the relaxation of how people intermixed within that society. Now, that does not take away the brutality and all the other stuff that we'll ultimately talk about, that very distinct difference based on religion, because England was Protestant and their British policies were dictated that way, and the strongholds of Catholicism took a hold on Spain and other areas, parts south, when you're talking about South America. So we had this wonderful play during our dinner on Friday at Columbia Restaurant, which is an old St. Augustine. We learned a lot about the history, lots of tourism that takes place there to this day, and it's just a real interesting place. And again, the food was just exquisite. The next day, on Saturday, we started off at Fort Mose. We actually went there. The fort is no longer there. There's no trace of the houses that were there, but the National Park Service runs that particular space now. So they have a wonderful visitor center where you can go, where our group went, and we heard the history of Fort Mose from Bernadette Reeves, who was our host for that particular event. She works for an organization called St. Augustine Tours, and just is really well-versed. Her husband is originally from that area, and when she married, then she moved down there with her husband, an African-American, just a real thought leader and historian. So it was a real eye-opener for us. Obviously, I had done some of the homeworks. I knew some of the history. But for those who traveled with us, it was just really a great opportunity for them to see firsthand that wonderful area. It was a hot day, very hot day. We did a little walking around the areas. You walk out on a bridge and you go all the way out to an area that's filled with tadpoles and swampland, et cetera. And that's where the people live. That's where they lived out in that area for 20, 30 years, freed people, raised their families there, swore their allegiance to the Spanish, became Catholic, and lived out their lives during that time. They were also challenged and had to be protected by the Spanish because the English wanted to come and take back their slaves. So they, on at least two occasions, did their best to come back and wreak havoc on that community. At some point, that the inhabitants of Fort Mosey had to leave quickly and go into the more fortified area of St. Augustine during those bombardments by the British troops, led by Oglethorpe was his name, one of the British leaders. So, again, the history is just, you just say, wow, just amazing. And then we left Fort Mosey and went and took a tour of Lincolnville, which is a community within St. Augustine named for Abraham Lincoln, and a lot of the civil rights activities played out in Lincolnville. So again, some of the history you may or may not know. Some people just think about the Carolinas and Georgia and Mississippi, but there was a lot of activity that took place during the civil rights era in Lincolnville and greater St. Augustine. St. Augustine also has the oldest wooden school in the country, so there is certainly a city of firsts, and you can certainly go there, and it's beautiful. It's right on the coast, so it's right off the Atlantic Ocean, and so you have that as a backdrop. Lots of tourism takes place, a lot of history, and if you listen to this program, and if you know the history of the Cake Walk, that's CakeWalk, the Cake Walk, I want you to email me and tell me what does it mean, what is the history of it related to St. Augustine, and I will give you a prize. I'll send you a prize. My email address is tellcarole, TellCarole, at mac.com. This is going to be an exclusive for my radio audience. So if you know the history of the Cake Walk, CakeWalk, connected to St. Augustine, drop me an email and you'll get a prize if you're correct. That's just a little mystery. We'll solve it much later on. So part of the tour was also going to two very important places, or at least being referenced to two very important places. One I'll talk about now, and that is the former Woolworth discount store. We know of it now as the later day version of Kmart and those kind of discount stores. But if you grew up in the era that I grew up, you knew about Woolworth. And during that time, there was lots of segregation, and blacks could not sit at the lunch counter at Woolworth. Now, a similar incident happened in North Carolina. So we know about that, and what I want you to do is to picture the same kind of activities taking place in St. Augustine in the mid-60s when black people protested not being able to sit at the lunch counters at Woolworth. Fast forward. Now that building is occupied by Wells Fargo Bank, but the town has made a stipulation that any business that occupies that building, Wells Fargo is now there in a jewelry store, that the front doors that currently have the Woolworth mark on them can never be replaced. So you're going into a bank, but you're seeing history at the same time. That's how they beautifully embedded history with a present-day focus. And Wells Fargo, once you enter into a little alcove that ultimately takes you into the bank, on the left-hand side is a glassed-in replica of the lunch counter that existed in the 60s when this protest took place. where people were arrested and beaten, and that's a whole different show. But what really captivated me was one of my travelers. I was just so excited that she understood, finally, the importance of the city and the era, because when she screamed out, "Oh my God, I did not know all this took place in Florida. I knew it took place in Georgia and the Carolinas, but not Florida." And I figured my job as an educational tour manager and guide was really sinking through. And that was a real historic moment for me. So we did lots of other things, but again, just seeing that Woolworth building, those door handles, the glass doors that still exist today, the lunch counters that have been replicated, just simply amazing. The second thing in St. Augustine was hearing the story again from Bernadette Reeves, and also we went to a wonderful Black museum that has lots of history, including the history of Lincolnville, St. Augustine, Dr. Martin Luther King, who came there, and everything else, and the Munson Hotel, M-O-N-S-O-N, something else you may not know that much about, but it happened. The Munson Hotel was a privately owned motel in St. Augustine that did not allow Blacks to rent rooms or definitely not to swim in their pools. Because of the freedom fighter movement that took place during that time, there were a group of activists led by a white activist who checked into the Munson Hotel because he was white, he could do that, and then slipped in these Black teenage activists who came with him. And this was all coordinated, again, with Dr. King's movement, the Civil Rights Movement, etc., all very orchestrated, but again, to end racial segregation. In time, in June of 1964, I'm pretty sure this was in 1964, this group jumped in the pool along with the Black teenagers and created great commotion with those who were staying at the hotel and the hotel owner. That owner then went and got sulfuric or cleaning acid, cleaning supply liquid that they clean pools with, and came and poured that acid in the pool. It was pictured. We actually saw the pictures of that, and there now has been a documentary about that. Obviously, it scrambled the young kids in the pool, including Mimi Ford Jones, who is a friend of mine here in Boston, and who was in that pool that day. There's been a documentary made about that particular time period, and that particular photo that shows this man pouring this acid in the pool, the kids are busy trying to get out. You see Mimi, she's terrified. It went viral during that time in 1964. And that one act that took place in St. Augustine contributed, didn't lead it all the way, but definitely contributed to the passing of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. So again, St. Augustine, extremely important to racial desegregation in the United States. So the fact that Dr. King had been there, that pool incident, the Woolworth doors, just amazing in terms of that was just St. Augustine. I plan on going back to St. Aug and learning a lot about the area. You can also find out more about Fort Moses by doing a Google search. And again, I'm going to have all this between my websites. I'll have all the pictures of the travel website, and then between the other websites, I'll have other information so that you can follow it and start your own search yourself. But Fort Moses is Fort in M-O-S-E, Fort Moses. You can do a search for that. There is also a historical society called the Fort Moses Historical Society, and they are doing a great job of keeping the legacy alive. You can join that for a mere $25. I joined just to keep up. And then Fort and then St. Augustine has lots of history. They're old. They're now 452 or 3 years old. They had a big celebration a couple of years ago celebrating their 450th anniversary. So those regions and that particular region is alive and well, and I would encourage you, really encourage you, to take a trip down there. Yeah, you could go to the beach. You know, my trips don't tend to be beach-oriented. I want people to learn. You can go to the beach on your own. You know, so you can have fun. We had a lot of fun, awful lot of fun. So you can go on the beach and that kind of stuff, but at least take in the history so that you can teach that history to your children and other people who don't necessarily have a broad perspective of this whole concept of slavery. When you say the Atlantic slave trade, you are definitely talking about a very wide geographical area that just didn't include what we now know as the United States. It included Latin America and South America as well, and parts of Africa, primarily West Africa. So just really, really fascinating. So we left Fort St. Augustine. I always want to say Fort Lauderdale for some reason, but we weren't even in Fort Lauderdale, in St. Augustine. We left there, motored down to Miami. That's about a 4.5-5 hour drive down to Miami. Had great young man, Lester, who was our driver. And again, the food was great. We also ate at Aunt Kate's, which is right on the St. John's River. In St. Augustine on Saturday evening, and had wonderful food. I had the Low Country Boil, which is crab legs and mussels and clams and corn on the cob. The food was just yummy, just delicious. And then that next morning, we got up and we drove down to Miami. Had a great reception waiting for us in Miami by my niece and nephew at Niamdi's Art Gallery, Niamdi NAMDI, Contemporary Art Gallery in the Wynwood section of Miami. I'm going to do a whole show probably at some point on Miami because that whole area has just been reinvented. Gobs of people down there, mostly young, very hip, and just a amazing area, really amazing area. And then the next morning on Monday, went off to Havana. 44-minute flight on American Airlines, very short. We were greeted. We had zero problems getting through customs. Obviously, we were an organized group, and we were traveling under one of the special people-to-people licenses, and this clearly was an educational trip dealing with people and culture. So that's how you can travel to Cuba. And then the adventure began. So clearly I'm about to run out of time, and you're going to have to stay tuned on bated breath to find out more about the actual trip to Cuba. But I will give you this answer because I asked it with my newsletter. Cuba did not end slavery until 1886. In 1886, that's when slavery ended in Cuba. We know it ended here in this country between 1863 with the Emancipation Proclamation and 1865 when the Civil War ended. But it continued on for another 20 years in Cuba. Another thing about Cuba is that there were almost twice as many Africans brought to Cuba as there were in the United States. So there is a very, very, very strong African presence in Cuba, and it's been that way since the country was founded. And as I had mentioned earlier, in the 1500s, that's when the first Spanish came to Cuba, and they came with about 300 slaves. So there's a very strong African presence that you can feel everywhere you go in Cuba. Yes, Castro is an enormous public figure and did tremendously well in terms of leveling the playing field in terms of equality in Cuba. And what the Cubans do with so little is just amazing. I saw a man use a bottle for a rolling pin to roll out some clay, making some tiles. You'll have to go to my website, find out more. Thanks so much for listening. This is just the beginning of the journey. Take care. We will talk to you in about 2 weeks. See you later. Bye-bye. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and remember, empowerment begins when you believe in yourself. You can go and find out more about this at MSS Travel and Tours, and also just punch my name in, Carol Copeland Thomas with an E, carolwithane.com, and the journey will continue there. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.